Pure Dog Talk is the voice of purebred dogs. We talk to the legends of the sport and give you the tips and tools to create an awesome life with your purebred dog. From showing to preservation breeding, from competitive obedience to field work, from agility to therapy dogs, and all the fun in between, your passion is our purpose. Today's show is brought to you by Show Dog Prep School. Online courses, webinars, and mentor programs on demand at showdogprepschool.com. Welcome to Pure Dog Talk. I'm your host, Laura Reeves, and I have a super special guest today. Nancy Russell is joining us, and many of you will remember, but I suspect our listeners, there are enough young folks that you will not remember when the Stormcloud Alaska Malamute team ran the Iditarod. So we're going to talk about that, and I am so excited. So thank you, Nancy. I appreciate your time.
Thank you for having me. Yeah, it's been a long time since this happened, so I had to go back and kind of refresh my memory. We're talking 24 years, I think, 1994.
Right? I remember it very vaguely, but I was not young in the sport, but I was young enough. I was just barely paying attention. So give us, we call it the 411. So why, how did you get started even in Alaskan Malamutes?
Well, actually, we were at my sister-in-law's place having a picnic in the backyard, and this great big beautiful furry dog came over and kind of begged for food off the table, which is very typical Alaskan Malamute.
Yes.
And that was the first time I'd ever seen a Malamute. It was her next-door neighbor's dog.
Wow.
And then it was just a few months after that, I was at a family reunion. And my cousin John showed up with a Malamute puppy, which he had purchased for $25 from Milton Hinkey.
Oh my gosh.
In Poinette, Wisconsin. And of course, we rushed. This was like, oh boy, I have to have one of those. So we went right over and got another puppy from the same litter for $25.
And what year was this?
That was back in 1964.
Oh my gosh.
And I was a very novice dog person. I'd never had a dog of my own. Always been crazy about dogs and animals in general. But my parents didn't believe in having a dog in town.
Mm.
So I really had no knowledge of dogs whatsoever. And I think that's probably one of the reasons that I've been able to help over the years a lot of novice people. And I trust a lot of novice people. Because I realize that if you've never had dog experience, that doesn't mean you can't be a good dog owner.
Absolutely. And starting with an Alaskan Malamute, I mean, not an easy breed for for a novice dog owner.
Not an easy breed to start out with, right. And I actually lost my first puppy. We had moved out in the country, but we were right next to a railroad track. And I was outside with the puppy, and the telephone rang, and I ran in, left the puppy outside. When I came back, it was dead on the railroad tracks.
Oh, that makes me cry.
Yes. So it was a hard lesson. You never, ever leave them alone. You never trust them not to stay in the yard. And since then, I don't.
Right.
They are always on leash, or they are in harness, or they are in a fenced-in area. The very next litter, we called Mr. Hinkey and called to let us know. And the very next litter, we went and got another puppy. But it was now $35. And that was Russell's Yvette, became Russell's Yvette Rose CD, who produced 11 champions for us.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness. And you are now an AKC judge all these years later, correct?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I think that if I had known what I was doing, I probably could have finished her. She was a very sound dog structurally. But not particularly pretty. She didn't have a lot of coat. And like I said, I knew nothing about dogs, so we told our kids, don't touch her tail, don't go near her food dish. Dogs don't like that. And as a result, Mama Betty, as she became to be known, ruled the roost. I'll tell you. It took six of us to do her toenails.
Oh, my gosh.
Anyway, like I said, I made so many mistakes. But I finally took her to obedience class, and my obedience instructor said, you know, there's a show in Milwaukee coming up. Yeah, I think you should enter her. She's a very sound dog. He helped me fill out the entry form. I entered her in the novice class. It turned out to be a Malamute specialty.
Oh.
I got a blue ribbon and a trophy. She beat two other dogs in that class, and I was hooked.
Yeah, yeah.
And at that show, I saw the most beautiful Malamute I have ever seen, and I still think he is, and that was Glacier Storm Cloud. He was 9 months old in the puppy class. He was shown by his owner, Lois Ullman, on a toy lead. And he performed beautifully. He went winner's dog and best of winners.
Oh, my gosh.
And I rushed over to Lois, of course, and said, I want to breed my bitch to your dog, right?
Mm-hmm.
And she was nice, polite, said, well, you have to get her hips x-rayed, and you have to take her to the vet and get a vet check on her that she's healthy, and send me her pedigree, and I'll let you know. So I did that, and her hips cleared. And you were talking back then, actually,
right.
Storm Cloud's OFA number is 40.
Wow. That's impressive.
He was one of the very first Malamutes to get an OFA hip score. And I don't remember what Betty's was, but it wasn't much more than that. But anyway, her hips cleared, and Lois said, okay, agreed to the breeding. So we did the breeding. And I said to Lois, if you ever want to sell this dog, I want to buy him. I couldn't sell the puppies. I didn't know anything about selling dogs. And people didn't even know what Alaskan Malamutes were, hardly. We traded one for a gun. I placed one on a co-ownership with a friend. And Lois took three or four of the puppies, I think there were eight at the time, and sold them in the Chicago area for me. And anyway, she called me. I think Bear was 13 months old. By the way, his call name was Bear.
Mm.
And she called me when he was 13 months old and said, I've decided to sell him. She owed me for the puppies. And she said, you know, if you're still interested. So I called Bob at work, met him on the south side of Milwaukee, and we drove down and picked him up. I didn't give her a chance to change her mind.
Oh.
Storm Cloud is now still the top producing sire in breed history with 65 champions.
Wow.
He was the top producer by the time he was only 4 years old. Lois had showed him, and he had taken two group placements, which back in that time put him in the top 10 Malamutes for the year, because Malamutes were so seldom placed in a group, much less were even in the group. So when you consider that this was before frozen semen and before people drove to, you know,
right.
Everybody had to drive to the stud dog. We didn't ship dogs back then. It's a pretty good feat for him to have 65 American champions.
I think that's very impressive.
Anyway, Lois became a mentor. Lois Ullman, wonderful mentor. Helped me with everything, dog structure, showing, grooming, you name it. We traveled to shows together, and she showed Bear for me because I didn't know anything about dog showing. Finally, I did show him the first time under Phil Marsh, and as he gave me the ribbon, he said, well, the dog sure won that. So I finally found some training classes locally to go to. Nelson Radcliffe gave some, and he came up from Chicago and gave classes in Milwaukee. So I learned a little bit more about showing, and so then I started showing him myself. But I realized, you know, if this dog is really going to go to his potential, he needs a professional handler, because I can't go to all the shows, and I'm not as good as a professional handler. And so I saved up $500, and I called Rich Orsino, and I said, would you consider taking him in? Rich had had Malamutes of his own and had seen Bear, and he said, sure, he'd be glad to. Well, in the first month, he got four group ones and a best in show.
Wow.
And when I got the bill, I didn't know anything about bonuses.
Right.
And my $500 was gone.
I was going to say, how far did that $500 take you?
1 month.
Oh, my gosh.
So I called Rich and I said, well, I can't show him anymore. I don't have any more money. And Rich said to me, no way. He said, I don't care if it takes you 10 years to pay the bill. We're showing this dog the rest of the year.
Yeah.
And it did take me several years to pay the bill.
Yep.
And he never asked me for the money. I just paid him whenever I got money enough to pay him off. And actually, Rich was a very good mentor as well. He helped me with showing he and BJ. And my daughter and I, Jerry's, my daughter started showing in junior showmanship. Back then, you could show at 8 years. Mm-hmm. She had 8 years of age, so she started showing Bear. And he was so well trained by Lois that Jerry was so small that she couldn't reach over the top of him. So she had to run around him to set his legs on the opposite side. And so it was kind of fun to watch her show. And he was probably one of the very first Malamutes to be used in junior showmanship because he was so trustworthy and he was not aggressive. A lot of the Malamutes were very dog aggressive at that time.
Right. Early days. Yeah.
Early days. Very dog aggressive. In fact, we used to hear, oh, the Malamutes are coming, and everybody parted as we went to the ring. But he was not. Lois had done a wonderful job of not only training him, but socializing him, and Jerry showed him in juniors. And she was the first junior handler to qualify with the Malamute for Westminster. She showed him in 1972 at Westminster and made the final cut with him.
That's an impressive feat.
Yes, it is. My goal then, I was so impressed with this dog, and I wanted to produce another Storm Cloud or more Storm Clouds. So I based my breeding program on him, and I did a lot of line breeding and inbreeding to him.
Mm-hmm.
I bred him to his half-sister. I bred him to his granddaughters. I bred him to his nieces. And eventually, I even bred him to his daughter. And if you go back on the pedigrees behind my Iditarod team, you will see that very, very close breeding to Storm Cloud.
Interesting.
In fact, Champion Storm Cloud's Umiak, who is the sire of six of the Iditarod team, and six of his sons and daughters are on the team, six of his grandsons and daughters on the team, and the other three were great-grandsons.
Wow.
Yeah. So my entire team went back to Storm Cloud's Umiak. And if you look at Umiak's pedigree, you will see that his great-grandfather in all four generations is Storm Cloud.
Interesting.
And two of those times, one he was bred to a daughter, and one he was bred to a granddaughter. And the other two times was he was bred to an Old North dog called Remberg, Toddy of Doc's pal. She was Old North Wind Silver Sled, and that's basically what was behind him. He came from, if you went back, his pedigree went back to North Wind dogs and back to Silver Sled dogs.
Interesting.
And the only outcross was Champion Totem Snowstar, which was a dog from the Pacific Northwest, and she went back to somewhat North Wind, but also had some Codera and some other bloodlines. So that was basically the only outcross in that pedigree.
Wow.
And he was the sire or grandsire or great-grandsire of everything on the team.
Wow. Hang tight, guys. Got a little bit of information for you. We'll be right back to the podcast in a minute. All right, crew. Last month, I was filling you in on the Trupanion Breeder Support Program. And in case you missed it, this is a free program for breeders that lets us offer our buyers, our puppy buyers, a go-home day offer so that they can try out Trupanion and everybody has the peace of mind that that puppy is covered in case of any kind of an incident. But I was talking to Haran recently, and I didn't realize at the time that they actually have a breeding rider that is additional to the regular healthcare coverage that Trupanion offers our dogs. And so I wanted to bring Haran Greer from Trupanion back to tell us about it because I was blown away. So welcome, Haran.
Thanks, Laura. Thanks for having me back. And I'm happy this came up in conversation.
Yeah, right? So tell us about it. This is pretty incredible to me.
Yeah, so I'll just start at the basics. You know, so if you join Trupanion, we just have one simple plan. It's 90% coverage for the unexpected illnesses, accidents, and injuries. And then from there, breeders can add a breeding rider coverage to make sure that they're protected from the unexpected things that can happen with breeding.
Okay, so what does that cover? What kind of things are you covering in your claims with the breeding rider?
So it's truly things that are unexpected. So anything that you can't plan for in advance is what Trupanion gives you peace of mind from, right? But with the breeding rider, you know, the most common claim that we see are for C-sections.
Mm-hmm.
But as I was looking through, I was curious just to see what kind of claims we have been seeing in the past year. I was surprised that pyometra payouts have exceeded what we've paid out for C-section.
Wow.
So the claims paid ranged from the lowest one that we paid out was $1,740, and the highest one to date this year has been $5,500.
That's pretty incredible. So how much does a person pay to add that breeding rider to their regular insurance coverage?
So that rider has variables. You'll want to give us a call or go to our website. The factors are things like where you live, what breed you have, is it a male or female, how old are they, and then the deductible. And those right. deductible options is where, you know, the flexibility comes in mm-hmm. for your monthly payment. And those range from $0 to $1,000.
Okay, beautiful. So check it out, listeners, puredogtalk.com. You can find the Trupanion website. Just click that logo and it will take you in to get lots and lots of information about some stuff that I think not all of us always think about. So thank you, Haran. I really appreciate your time.
Thanks so much, Laura. I hope to be back on soon.
What made you want to train a team for the Iditarod? I mean, it's a pretty impressive goal. What made you want to do that?
Well, actually, the very first time they ran the Iditarod in 1973 and I heard about it, I thought, this is the perfect race for Malamutes. This is in the Arctic where they came from. It's over Wilderness Trail. That's what they were. They were the Eskimos. You really didn't even have a trail. And they only had 4 checkpoints in 1,050 some miles. So they had to carry everything on their sled. So they're basically freighting.
Right.
So to me, this would be a real test of the Alaskan Malamute's ability to go back and do what it was bred to do. And I thought, oh, I would just love to see my Malamutes do that. And I would love to do that. I've always been fascinated by Alaska. Read everything I could about Alaska, Eskimos, Arctic explorers. That's how I gained my information about what the breed should really be like. Because back then, there really wasn't that much information. So by doing a lot of reading about Eskimo life and early Arctic explorers and how they used the dogs, I got an idea of what the dogs were really like and what was important, you know, for their survival and for them to be able to do the job they were bred to do.
Right.
So I felt this would be the ultimate test. Well, there was no way I could do that. I didn't know anything about mushing. Of course, I didn't have the money
right.
to do that. But I followed the Iditarod for years. And, of course, I started mushing my dogs. And so in the 1980s, I had a freight team. They used ISDRA, which is the International Sled Dog Association, used to have a freighting, I guess you would call it, freight races, where the dogs would carry so much weight per dog on the sled, usually dependent on what the weight is, but in our area they use salt bags, which were 66 pounds per dog.
66 pounds per dog?
On the sled.
Wow. It
was usually a bag of salt. And they were freight races, and they were usually about 10 miles long, at least the ones that we had in the area in Wisconsin, which was at Wisconsin Dells mostly. They were put on by the Tri-State Alaskan Malamute Club. They were ISDRA sanctioned. And I ran those in a couple of years. Actually, my team consisted of my top-winning dogs in the 80s and 90s. Three of them were best in show dogs, and 5 of them were group winners on that team later on.
Wow.
And I ran the race 2 years. The first year, it was in the mid-80s, and it was terrible conditions, icy conditions. There were quite a big entry. And I, even though I came in last, I placed because so many people with the faster dogs smashed their sleds.
Oh, interesting.
And Jamie Nelson was running the race. Now, Jamie's the lady who ended up running my dogs in the Iditarod.
Right. That's what I was thinking.
Yeah, and she was in this race. She came in 45 minutes ahead of everybody else. I came in last, but I actually got a placing so that I ended up with an ISDRA-ranked freighting team that year. And she came over at the banquet and congratulated me on running my show dogs. And I found out that she had started out in obedience and in junior showmanship years ago with a German Shepherd. And we just kind of hit it off. I went to the Tri-State Alaskan Malamute Club, had her come down that summer and do a seminar on how to train your dogs to pull. And I went to. And I was so impressed with the way she not only trained, but also the way she handled Malamutes. She obviously was not afraid of them, knew how to make them behave, and they trusted her. So I found out that she had trained a lead dog for the John and Helen Schultz. So I called her up, and I said, I did not have a good leaders. My leaders followed a trail, or they followed a team ahead of them. But as far as being G-Haw leaders and going where I wanted them to go, I didn't really know how to do that. So I called her up, and I asked her if she would consider training a dog for me for lead, and she said, sure. So I actually sent her up two dogs, a dog and a bitch, and she called me back in about 3 weeks and said, you can come on up, but I want you to come and stay for 3 days because I want to show you what I did, how I did it, and what you need to do to continue their training.
Right.
So I went up and I stayed at Jamie's house for 3 days, and we became really good friends. And from then on, every spring or every summer, I would go up to Jamie's for a week to 10 days, and Jan Richards, who was another Malamute person from Minnesota and was learning to run dogs as well, and Jan had bought dogs for me. We would go to Jamie's house, and we would help her train her Alaskan puppies.
Right.
She had Alaskan huskies. So what she would do when they were about 3 months old, she put them on a chain for 3 days so they would get used to being confined. Otherwise, they ran loose in her yard and had a chance to meet everybody that came, and she had a horse and she had other dogs and everything. So they got really good socialization. Then she put them on a chain for 3 days, so they got used to being confined and also got used to getting themselves out of the chain.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of the reasons that sled dogs need to be tethered, is because it teaches them how to get out of a chain.
Right.
Or how to get out of the lines. And that's so important when they're sledding, because if they get tangled in the lines and they panic, they're going to get hurt. If they live on a chain or on a line, they know how to get out of them. They know how to shake their foot off. I've even seen them flip on their back when they get two legs tangled.
Right.
And let the line slide off and jump back up. And I've seen them do it on a sled, which just amazed me that they could do that and do it so fast. And so they don't panic, and that way they don't hurt themselves.
Which is critical when they're trying to keep going, right?
Yes, right. When you've got other dogs pulling you and you've got the line tangled around your leg or your throat,
right,
you've got to know how to get out of it without getting hurt. And by the time that a musher stops and goes up and untangles you, the dog's going to be hurt.
Yeah.
So it's very important for them to know how to do that and to not panic when it happens. So anyway, she ties them out for 3 days so they get used to the chain and so they get used to figuring out how to get out of it. And then we hook them up. She puts two of her oldest, most experienced leaders up in front, dogs that will go slow when she tells them to.
Mm-hmm.
And then I usually put two of my biggest Malamute males in wheel to do the pulling.
Right.
Basically pulling. And we would put 6 to 8 puppies in between of her puppies. And slow. Her thing is slow. You start out slow because they don't know where they're supposed to go straight ahead.
Right.
And they're all over the place and they're jumping on each other and they're getting tangled up. So if you go really slow, they have time to untangle. They have time to think about what they've done. And it would usually take about somewhere around 4 miles before they would all figure out that going straight ahead
going in the same direction
in the same direction was the best option. Right.
Oh my gosh.
And then we would do this for a couple of days, and then we would speed it up to a slow trot, and then Jan and I would get in a vehicle with a side door, and one of us would lay on the side door with a video camera, and we would video the puppies from the side. And so we could take it back, and Jamie could look at their confirmation when they were trotting.
Huh.
And that helped her decide which ones she wanted to keep for herself.
Very cool.
It wasn't always the structure, but a lot of it had to do with their temperaments as well.
Mm-hmm.
But if there was definitely something wrong with the structure, then it was not a puppy that she would probably keep.
Right.
So that was a real learning experience for me. And we started doing that with, I sometimes would bring Malamute puppies up and we'd put them in the team.
Sure.
And do the same thing. And we videoed all the dogs of the Iditarod team the same way. which is very interesting, and I used it in my judge's education program that I did for the Malamute Club in later years.
And so what did you see? I mean, that to me is fascinating. What pieces of those dogs stood out as saying, this is going to make a great freighting or a great sledding dog?
First of all, you want to see a nice top line that's level and doesn't bounce up and down. You want to see a complete extension of the hock joint when they're pulling. And you want to see the balance so that the back foot comes down exactly where the front foot leaves off.
Mm-hmm.
If you see the shoulders popping up, you probably got straight shoulders and the dog isn't able to use its rear end unless it's straight in the rear as well. And if it's straight both front and rear, you know, then you have a dog that has to take more steps in order to cover the same amount of ground as one that has more angulation. Although the straighter dogs can still do well if they're balanced.
Right.
You want to see the head down. A head back up in the air is usually an indication that they're trying to get more reach out of the front than it really
than it has to give.
Than it has to give, right. So these were all things that she was looking at. Foot pattern, top line, and head position.
Fascinating.
And that's pretty much what you look for in a show dog. I mean,
right.
It's going around the ring.
Right.
You know, the same thing, only now we're doing it with a dog that's actually pulling.
That actually has weight attached to it, sure.
Right, right.
Very, very cool. Very cool. So you've got these dogs, and Jamie's helping you, and you've trained them, and you've conditioned them, and you are entered in the Iditarod. Like, this lifetime dream. That is so cool.
Yeah, well, how it happened that she ended up with Malamutes is that she was in the 1989 Iditarod with her Alaskan team. And she received a good sportsmanship award because she saved a guy's life.
Wow.
Which she gave up her chance of being first place for the novice musher because she was ahead of the other mushers. And when this, she came upon somebody who was very ill and stayed with him and saved his life.
Wow.
So she ended up at the back of the pack. And she had someone come to her and want to use her dog in some commercials. And then when they went out in the dog yard and saw what they looked like, her Alaskan Huskies, they said, well, but these don't look like sled dogs.
No.
You know, sled dogs are either Siberians or Malamutes, right?
Right.
So she was disappointed. And she also had taken Santa Claus, you know, pulled Santa Claus on a sled and in some parades and stuff. And she thought, you know, if I had some Malamutes, I could do commercials with them and I could bring Santa Claus in and I could do some of these fun things that would also raise me a little extra money and publicity.
Right.
So I said to her, well, I'll bring you up a litter of puppies. So in 1989, I brought up a litter of puppies and she kept six of them, five boys and a girl. And that was the basis of what turned out to be the Iditarod team, except she sent the girl home because she said when she hooked them up, the girl jumped up and down, screamed, let's go, let's go, and then she let the boys do all the work.
Such a girl.
She called her the cheerleader. She said, I don't need cheerleaders on my team.
Oh, my God, that's hysterical.
So Harmony came back to me. She kept the five boys. And by the time they were 13 months old, she had 500 miles on them, which was another thing that interested me greatly because I had been told by people who had Malamutes that you shouldn't work Malamutes until they're 2 years old because they're not mature enough.
Right.
And here these were guys were 13 months old, and they already had 500 miles in harness. And we did some x-rays on them just because I was curious whether or not it was doing any damage.
Right.
We found a couple of them had some, wasn't wear, it was like a line in the femur.
Hmm.
I don't know what it was from, but anyway, when they were re-x-rayed at 2 years of age, they both came back OFA excellent.
Wow.
And that had gone away. So whatever it was, it didn't affect their OFA x-rays. And that was one of the things that really impressed me was until these dogs did the Iditarod. I had never had an OFA excellent on a male, my big males. And I got several from that team were OFA excellent, and they were big dogs.
Interesting. Do you attribute that to the more exercise on uneven surface? You know, I hear a lot about that. They need to not be on a flat, solid surface, right?
Well, where Jamie lives, it's not that hilly. I mean, it's not mountainous like where we live now. It is fairly flat. But so, yes, they were run on flat surfaces. They weren't run on hard surfaces. They were run on roads
right.
and trails. Also, I attribute a lot of it to being on the chain.
Interesting.
All these dogs, they not only had better hip scores, the lowest on the whole team was a good, and I think I had 5 excellence in my males, and they averaged 2 years longer lifespan. I'd never had a dog live past 13, and I had several of those Iditarod dogs that lived to be 15 years old, and they were still running for me at 13.
Wow.
Including the leader. And since then, since we've moved to Colorado, my dogs are on chains in a dog yard. I would never go back to kennels.
Interesting.
They have a much longer lifespan. They keep their muscle tone up. They eat the same food that they ate. My dogs are all on 30% protein, 20% fat. And even though I have 3 13-year-olds and they're not fat, and my girls, I spay the girls, of course, when they're past their breeding age, and they don't get that fat. You know how spayed females put on fat?
Yeah.
They don't get that.
Interesting.
And the only thing I can think of is that they get more exercise yeah. because they're actually pulling something all the time with the chain.
Right. Interesting.
So they keep a better muscle tone. I don't know what else it could be, but I have a 13-year-old out in my kennel right now. She's still running lead. Slow. We do have to go slow. But she still jumps on the roof of her house and off. I can't believe she can still do that at 13.
Wow.
And up until we ran the dogs and put them on the chains, I'd never had one live beyond 13.
Interesting.
So I'm definitely in favor.
Yeah.
And another thing
yeah.
you know that people never even think of until you have multiple dogs like this is when you go in a kennel, the first thing the dog does when it sees you coming with the food is jump on the gate, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's off, you know, get off,
right.
back up, whatever.
Right.
Negative command, put the food down. You have the same thing, a negative command when you go in to clean the run. You have the same negative command when you go in to water through the water pails, okay? When the dog's on the chain, you just walk in their area. There's no negative command.
Very, very interesting.
Plus, it takes me about 1/3 of the time to clean and feed and water as it does for a dog in a kennel.
Mm-hmm.
Because I don't have to open the door, close the door, and then do whatever I'm going to do, you know,
mm-hmm.
and worry about the dog getting out.
Yeah, right.
And so it's just, when you have multiple dogs, I mean, if you only have one or two dogs, no big deal going in and out of the kennel, except for the negative command part. But a lot of these mushers who run the Iditarod in these big races, they have anywhere from 50 to 200 dogs. And can you imagine the time that it would take if they were all in kennels?
Yeah.
That's all they would be doing all day. And all the negative commands over the years, every day you're giving them 3, 4, 5 negative commands versus positive. When I go in to water the dogs, I stick the hose in the water bucket. I scratch the dog with one hand, right? So I get a positive thing. I can talk to the dogs instead of telling them, no, get off, back up. It's all positive. So much better for the dog, as well as me.
And now, a quick tip from our friends at American Dog Fancier. Keep your ad simple. And make sure its focus is on the dog. Very often in advertising, less is more. American Dog Fancier, affordable show dog advertising. Mention Pure Dog Talk and get 10% off your first ad with American Dog Fancier. The Dog Show Superintendents Association is a proud supporter of Pure Dog Talk. Our dog show superintendents are the hardworking people who make the dog show function. They are advocates for education and mentorship in the purebred dog fancy. So stop by the super's desk at your next show. Tell them how much you love Pure Dog Talk and give them a shout out for their support. That's all for today. Thank you for joining us on Pure Dog Talk.